You're listening to Speaking to Influence, Communication Secrets of the C-Suite. Do you want to speak with confidence and authority, have more influence, and get bigger and better results? Whether you're a top executive, an entrepreneur, or climbing the career ladder, this is the show for you. The leader who wants to inspire others and leave a lasting legacy. Now here's your host, world-renowned TEDx speaker, author, and executive communication coach, Dr. Laura Sekola.
Welcome to the podcast, Speaking to Influence, Communication Secrets of the C-Suite. I'm Dr. Laura Sekola, your host, founder of Vocal Impact Productions and author of Speaking to Influence, Mastering Your Leadership Voice. My guest this week is Lisa DiPaolo. Lisa is the Chief Human Resource Officer at Karyopharm Therapeutics. She's an HR global executive leader with over 25 years' experience, predominantly in the biotech and pharma space. She's also a leader of change and transformation with experience that spans various global businesses and functions across multiple geographies. She's passionate about connecting human capital to value and building cultures where people can thrive. Lisa, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Laura. Happy to be here.
Now, tell us a little bit about you. What's your fun fact?
My fun fact is about 3 years ago, I participated in an event called Haymakers for Hope, where I trained to box in a ring, a sanctioned fight in front of 2,500 people at the House of Blues in Boston. And I actually won. It was for cancer. I should say it was a charity for cancer. I raised over $75,000.
I don't know what I'm more impressed with, that you actually boxed, that you won, that you raised $75,000 for cancer. Wow, triple threat there. And I'm kind of glad I'm in a little further away from you right now in case I do something that makes you angry. I know who would win that fight really, really fast. So that's so much fun. Was it scary? Was it exciting?
Oh, all of the above.
Better question. Why? What would make you say, sure, I think I'll train how to get punched in the face? That's got to be worth it.
Well, I love a good challenge. And as I said, it was for a good cause, for cancer.
Yeah.
And I thought it would be good to do and see if I could live up to the challenge and do the training. And I survived and I actually won. And believe it or not, I am now an undefeated amateur boxer.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing. So you're still doing it.
Well, just from that one fight, I didn't continue actually sparring with people, but I still box and do the training because it's a good workout.
That is an understatement. Yes, I will definitely give you that. Good for you. That's how you stay in shape. Holy cow. Fighting, fighter championship. So now you're going to fight for people in one way or another, whether it's for cancer, for your team. I love it. Let's talk about some of the fights that you have won and the ways that you have battled for justice and for equity and for the people on your team. I can't wait to hear some of these stories. So tell us a little bit about Karyopharm. What is your 30-second elevator pitch?
Sure. Karyopharm Therapeutics is a pharmaceutical company with a mission to defeat cancer. We have a developed product for multiple myeloma. And we're right now expanding on that base in multiple myeloma and other cancers. So we're a team and culture committed to helping patients. That's what really drives us, to help patients with life-threatening illnesses. And we've been really working on evolving the culture in the place so people can come here, thrive, grow a career, and grow with the company.
That was a beautiful explanation. That was super clear. Was there ever a time when you thought that you did another great job that was super clear, explaining something only to have the listeners look at you like a deer in the headlights?
I'm sure it happened multiple times, but one that actually sticks out in my mind is I was working on a former pharmaceutical company years ago, earlier on in my career, and I was on a secondment to Switzerland.
What does that mean, a secondment?
I was on an expat assignment where I went to live and work in Switzerland for a period of time, about a year and a half.
Wow. Okay, great.
Yep. Great chocolate, great coffee, great skiing.
Yes.
But in this period of time, I was communicating, I was leading a culture initiative and I was working with the team there. And I found that I was presenting, but speaking really quickly. I had formerly lived and worked in New York as well. So I had that fast Northeast way of speaking, but I also used a lot of colloquialisms.
Yep.
I found myself using sports analogies and saying things like betwixt and between, things that really didn't resonate in that culture. And when I was done, what I thought was clear wasn't clear to anybody. And I wasn't paying attention and really connecting to the audience and seeing what their needs were, what their reactions were. I was really just getting out what I wanted to convey.
It sounds like if you were still in New York, it would have landed perfectly. Everybody would have known what you meant, understood all the words at the speed they were coming out. The references would have been there. And the, she's one of us, we get it, would have been a very easy vibe to establish. But that didn't quite translate to Switzerland.
No, it didn't. I think it's really about connecting with the audience and taking a step back and thinking about what they're going to need to know and how they're going to need to know it. And I think being new to the country, sometimes it just takes time. And I had just gotten there. So it was a lesson learned.
Then that's such an important lesson in empathy in kind of a different direction where, yes, you were the newcomer, but you were the native speaker. And in Switzerland, I'm guessing you had quite the range of linguistic diversity in that room. And while everyone spoke ridiculously fluent business English, that there's still a little bit of a difference in that, they, you know, humor and slang, colloquialisms, there are assumed shared cultural references that they are built on. And aside from the speed and whether or not they were used to your accent and whatever else, we forget that, and it's almost a mixed blessing that it's a tribute to them that they're so fluent in English as a second, third, fourth language, whatever it was, that you almost forgot that they weren't native speakers and thus would want to be a little bit more gentle or considerate in not dumbing it down by any stretch of the imagination, just not making it extra hard with a lot of those non-standard terms and references, just to keep it a little more straight in the delivery. Am I making myself clear?
Yeah, absolutely. That can have been done very differently. And that's what I would have done, would have just been to simplify what I was trying to say and leave out kind of the colorful personality or the sarcasm that would have landed well in the United States, but certainly not there.
Being a Jersey girl, you know, work in New York, in Philadelphia, DC, whatever else. Oh my gosh, sarcasm is in our blood.
Right.
And I just learned the hard way, especially when I moved to Japan the first time, but just realizing even if I can translate my sarcasm into Japanese, oh my gosh, does not land well.
Absolutely.
You just hear the crickets in the background or the little trumpet that goes wah, wah. It's like, okay. Yeah. I'm just going to tuck my tail between my legs and go in a different room right now and pretend this didn't happen. So there's a great example of vulnerability, but on a different level, when have you allowed yourself to be emotionally vulnerable with your team and how did it impact your relationship moving forward?
I think every once in a wonder, everybody has a bad day. I recall one time specifically that things were not going the way that I had planned. I had organized a meeting, was trying to get the leaders organized around this particular meeting, and had worked really hard to ensure that everything was clear and understood. I actually thought that walking into this leadership team meeting, it was going to be a big yawn because there was so much prep work involved and entailed. And it didn't happen that way. It unfolded in a whole different way. I think people had different questions. There were things that were unexpected and should have been anticipated, but weren't. And I know my team had worked really hard up to that point to get us to that meeting. So I myself was very disappointed both with how the meeting went and just was thinking through and ruminating, like, what could I have done differently? I think we all kind of do that, high performers especially. And I had to just be really real with my team and bring them together and say, I'm having a bad day. I'm still processing what happened in the meeting. You guys worked really hard to get it to this point. Things didn't really land. This is more of a me thing, not a you thing. And it's no reflection of you. But I need a minute to kind of regroup and reset and recharge my battery before I could get back at it. So if you could just give me a minute and just understand that I may not be full throttle, full on. You know, I just shared that with them and they were really understanding. And I think they saw, wow, she moves quickly and she gets stuff done, but she's also human yeah. and has moments where, you know, it doesn't always work out as perfectly as she plans for. So I think that really connected me to them in a deeper way.
Yeah, it's good to have those, oh my gosh, she is human too, revelations, whether it's big or small. It just makes you more relatable at that point because anybody who thinks their boss is too perfect, it's a standard that's impossible to meet and makes everyone else feel like they'll never be adequate. So I appreciate those things too. Now I'm curious, what is it that went differently than expected? What really landed that day?
What landed? I think just the enormous amount of preparation where everyone was spoken to individually before getting into the meeting, making sure that they were clear on what needed to be done. And then when we got in the room, it didn't look as though that prep even happened. It looked like there was questions.
Oh.
And listen, I know people take time and they have to digest. And in hindsight, it was probably no reflection of anything other than just circumstantial. And it was what it was. But questions came up that I felt were already addressed. But obviously, if people have questions, it's not still clear to them. So
the part that didn't land was just that everything was clearly prepared as far as what we were going to say, but it wasn't received as clearly as was anticipated.
That's exactly right.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Now, what about a time when you needed to assert yourself more powerfully?
I think I have a number of examples there. There are a number of instances. I'll give you one specifically I can recall where I had a relationship with a coworker that wasn't necessarily a harmonious relationship. It seemed a little bit more combative and that things were not being discussed openly, but they were rather being talked about at the water cooler or with other people. And specifically, this individual was saying things about my team members, about the work, and speaking negatively about the quality of their work. And so I just called her up and I said, I want to have a discussion with you. Can we grab a coffee? And I basically just shared that I was disappointed that we couldn't have this conversation as peers, as leaders. And I conveyed my perspective on the situation in terms of how the team was working and what they were doing. And I sought to listen and understand why she was having a negative reaction and, you know, how we could work more positively together. So I really was going to bat for my team members and putting it out there that this isn't acceptable and we should just talk it out and move on because we do need to work together. We don't need to like each other, but we do need to work together in a harmonious fashion, productive.
And how did she receive that?
I think at first a little bit defensive, to be honest, but then I think through the discussion and through active listening, I think it turned out really well. And we're actually really good friends to this day.
Oh, nice. So you really were able to get in and turn the tide, even if it wasn't necessarily a smooth pivot, but there was just enough that, look at that, that's that 2 millimeter shift again, right? That one little conversation to change the trajectory. And now, however many years later, you've gone from being combative coworkers at best to friends. I think that's quite the testament to what you're able to achieve when the effort to do, as you mentioned, active listening comes in. Was there a moment you can think of where, what did the active listening look like? How did you respond to something that she said that she seems to receive in a way that was meaningful to her? Do you remember any of those specifics?
I remember just speaking from the I. When she said something, I would validate and say, I understand, or I could see how you feel that way. And I would just speak from the I, from my own perception, because nobody could really argue with how you're feeling or your perception, and just keeping it really fact-based. I think that was really productive and it helped. And the active listening is really just not speaking up after every point and really taking a moment to breathe, even though you may have a reaction or you may have something on the tip of your tongue that you want to say right away, just to hold back and take a minute and process and let that energy diffuse a little.
That's such an important point, to just pause. It's so easy to react instead of thoughtfully respond. And thank you for that reminder. There's that desire to do point counterpoint. It's, you're halfway through a sentence. You've said something I disagree with, and I just want to cut you off to be able to correct you, to set the record straight, to tell you why I think you're wrong, as opposed to just let them finish, jot down a note for yourself, come back to it later. But just to hold off and not let it be a knee-jerk reflex and defensive response. Boy, what a difference that can make. Was that hard to do?
I don't think so. Maybe a little bit at certain points to hold back and bite your tongue. But I just kept telling myself that there's no one right answer here and that we have to find a common middle ground. And that's what that was about. And with that as top of mind, I think it helped guide and helped facilitate a productive discussion. And you know, Laura, they actually say that relationships that start off the rockiest actually become the strongest in the end.
That makes sense. That makes sense. Just because you have to work through stuff together. So if you do make that transition, you've learned to appreciate each other. It wasn't just a superficial agreement in the beginning.
Absolutely.
Interesting. All right. Well, so here's a challenge for everybody else. You just overcame a challenge. It's time for the Listener 24-Hour Influence Challenge. So Lisa, here is an invitation to you to speak directly to our audience and challenge them to take one step that they can complete within 24 hours to have more influence. How would you like to challenge our listeners today?
I would like to challenge the listeners by having them compliment as many people as you can within the next 24 hours, whether it be a colleague, a stranger, a leader in the organization. I think that by building this muscle, you build your ability to connect with people. And the more connected you are, the more influential you can be.
I think that's beautiful. What a happy way to just validate people. And for those out there who are going, ooh, that sounds touchy-feely. I'm not really a verbally effusive kind of person. Mm-hmm. Can you give us some examples of a compliment could be this or a compliment could be that? Like, what are some examples of easy compliments that could just sort of float. You can have them ready to go and you pick from your bag of 3 to 5 pre-prepared templates of sorts where you could say, yeah, that's a legitimate one to use here.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't have to be a big deal, but I think if you're at line at Starbucks getting a coffee and you see somebody and they have sunglasses on, you could say, you know, those are really cool sunglasses you have on. They look really good on you. It's just something like that. But at work, I would say noticing the little things that people do that maybe other people wouldn't notice or you wouldn't necessarily normally comment on, like, I really liked the way that you showed up in the meeting today. And I loved your enthusiasm and the comments and the information you provided. Your input was invaluable. Just small things like that, I think, go a long way.
Yes. And for those out there, I think, who are people of few words and fewer compliments as a natural state, you don't even need to use complete sentences.
Right.
And tell me, at least, if you agree with this, but I think you could use 2 words, just a general comment, an acknowledgement, and move on. Nice sunglasses, or nice socks, or nice manicure if somebody just got those done, or whatever it is, or, you know, that good comment about X in the meeting.
No, I agree. It doesn't have to be elaborate. It could be simple, short, but just do it.
Yep. And frankly, I think the shorter it is, the more authentic it sounds.
Agreed.
Just in passing, like it's a gut reflex. You just happen to see it. You happen to notice. Almost makes it feel more authentic to me.
Absolutely. Yeah, I agree.
Follow the KISS principle, right? Keep it simple, sweetheart.
Yes.
Give those compliments as you go. 24 hours, drop as many as you can. All right. So then what is the most nervous you've ever felt before a presentation or a speaking engagement? And what communications related lessons did you learn from the experience?
Yeah, I guess I would say, Laura, earlier on in my career, when I was working at another pharmaceutical company, I had to present to about 2,500 salespeople a new stock option program. And it wasn't my domain expertise. I had to really partner with the person responsible for creating the program that really knew the mechanics of it. So wasn't particularly comfortable in all facets. And when I went to the sales meeting, you know, there was a big stage, the lavalier mic, the music, it got dark, then it got light. So it was very daunting and a bit intimidating. So needless to say, of course, I was very intimidated and nervous.
So just to make sure I'm hearing that correctly, it was your first formal speaking engagement to the company and your audience for your very first presentation was 2,500 people, 2,500 people.
That's correct.
Piece of cake. Okay, so go on. What did you do?
First, I remembered to just breathe and to take a minute and pause. There was no need to rush, and I had to remind myself that. The other thing I did was I had to remind myself that no one knows this content better than me or as good as I did, and that even if I were to mess up a word or I didn't get something exactly right as I had planned for, no one's going to know, and that I just need to keep going and not get stuck on it. So I think those were 2 key learnings that really brought me through that presentation.
I think that's so important. So number one, just the preparatory act of pausing and breathing shifts the mindset right away. And it's so good to remind yourself that you're the presenter in this space because you have more knowledge than anybody else or than most people out there at the very least. Mm-hmm. And that's why you're here. Does the presentation have to be flawless? No, but you have valuable information to offer to everybody else out there and to lead with that confidence and that generosity. Like, I want to make sure everybody gets this. So that's been something that's carried you through to today, it sounds like.
Absolutely. Yes, definitely.
Beautiful. Now, tell me about a time when you needed to inspire others. What did you say? How did you say it? How was it received?
When I think of inspiring others, I think of vulnerability a little bit, you know, Speaking from the heart. And I could think of one instance in particular where my company at the time was going through a lot of changes, not Karyopharm, and it was shape shifting and leaders were leaving and new people were coming in and a lot of changes were just happening at the same time. And I knew my team was getting upset and kind of wondering about the future, wondering about their roles and wondering, you know, why are we still here? And while I myself felt some of those things as well, I needed to inspire the team. And I did that by just creating a space where we could talk openly, but also acknowledging that I too understand why people are feeling that way. And I was going through my own things in my own head. But really, the inspirational piece came from reminding people why I'm here, why I was there at that company, what the North Star was, and how we're changing lives and reminding them of the strategy and bringing together the element of the team and how we work together and we're all in it together. And this whole notion of being in it together, I think really helped bring the team up and remind them that we do have a purpose. We are mission driven and we've got work to do. And while it feels like the messy middle at the moment, because transformation is always messy, we know that we're going to prevail and get to the other side and we're going to be stronger because of it.
I love that expression. We're in the messy middle. I think most of us feel like we're in the messy middle more often than not. It's a very wide plateau rather than a bell curve. There's the beginning and then it's just a very long road through that tunnel or on that plateau in that messy middle stage. That's such a great expression. And I heard it's something important also that the importance of creating an explicit safe space for people to talk about it. When you know that people are struggling with something, to say, okay, let's address the elephant in the room. Let's have the conversation officially. So we're not hiding. We're not, to go back to your earlier story, we're not having a lot of just water cooler conversations, piecemeal. Like, let's address it. And most importantly, sort of tapping into the Simon Sinek start with why piece, the inspiration sounds like it came from the let's start with why. Why are we here? Why did we come here? Why are we still here? What are we trying to achieve as members of a larger team of the organization in curing cancer? And it sounds like that why was a good reminder. Maybe people forgot that along the way, even though it does, of course, it is scary when there is a lot of turnover. So that's, which is completely understandable. Am I hearing that correctly?
Yeah, it wasn't a cancer company at the time, but absolutely, it was all about creating life-saving medicines for patients. I mean, that was the heart of the mission. Absolutely.
Right, which is a very compelling why. All right, we're trying to save lives. So yes, that's a good reason to get out of bed and come to work together every morning. That's terrific. Now, in the past, when you've interviewed candidates for a leadership role or position, mm-hmm. have you ever thought, wow, this person really has it? Mm-hmm. And if so, what was that it factor and how'd you recognize it?
Yeah, when I worked at a previous company, I was in charge of hiring all the executives within the company. And there is one individual that stands out. I was hiring for a chief procurement officer at the time. And when I first met him, immediately felt that he had high energy, definitely had strong expertise in his area. But I really felt an overall passion for what he did, because you could really feel that what he does is something that he truly believes in and has been really good at in the past. But most importantly, I found that I was able to connect with him. He was able to connect with me. There was a sense of, yes, a sense of smart, of course, domain expertise, but also an overall humility. And he was just as interested about me and the organization. So a curiosity there. So the it factor for me was really, you know, it was a flowing discussion and with those elements of humility, knowledge, and his interest in the company and getting to know me, I think overall, that's what I considered the it factor. It felt like a normal conversation. It didn't feel like an interview. And we were just talking naturally and it felt pretty organic.
And I like the combination, the cocktail of sorts of qualities that it sounds like you recognize in him. So let me see if I got the main ones right. So for everybody out there who's on the job hunt or who is considering promotion and knows that interviews are going to be imminent, I heard a combination of high energy, and that doesn't mean bouncing off the walls, but it just means actively engaged. There's something about your physical presence that you feel physically engaged, the energy of your conversation, et cetera. Of course, content expertise, that's important. The passion and the conviction. Conviction is the confidence in who you are, what you're doing, but also that the connection with the person and humility, that the ability to have the balance between humility and conviction and confidence. And that part of that humility doesn't mean self-effacing, right? That's not what we're talking about. It's not, well, I'm not so good at this, or downplaying. It's not false modesty, but it's in part the humility was saying, I want to learn more. Tell me about this. I'm curious about you. I'm curious about the company. I'm curious about these other areas. Tell me more. Teach me. That kind of curiosity is a really valuable kind of humility that leaders should show. And of course, just the ability to have a conversation in the process. Did I outline that right?
Yeah, you nailed it.
Perfect. Absolutely. All right. So everybody else, go back to the notes and write these down later when you're out of your car, you're done walking the dog, whatever it is. But she just outlined for you the perfect avatar of the leadership interview. So take those notes seriously. Tattoo them on your forehead or, you know, write them on your bathroom mirror and grease marker or something along those lines. All right. Lastly, Lisa, what is something that you do to create a little bit more fun for your team?
Yeah, I think, you know, when I build a team, I do look for the fun factor in people. I look for energetic diversity and how each person can contribute to that whole notion of fun. I think everyone brings a little something to the table. And at Cario Farm, what we've done is we've gotten to the habit of regular team bonding activities, but nothing overly planned. I think it's as simple, the things we do is that we have lunch together when we are together in the office. I make a point of celebrating and recognizing people both for their birthdays and for key accomplishments. And we do have a board up for just the human resources team where we could write on their accomplishments of the day or the week that we do review regularly and give shout outs to people. And as a high energy person myself, I always like to inject a little fun into the conversations or our meetings around anything non-work related to bring that element of, you know, just humanity and a different topic other than the one we're talking about at that moment that's work related.
I like the balance of the personal stuff like birthdays, but also the accomplishments and giving people credit, public acknowledgement. And I'm sure there are others out there who don't like public recognition, don't like to be the center of attention of some sort. I'm curious if there is somebody on your team who is much more of that extreme kind of introverted type who's like, I don't want to be the center of attention. I don't want everybody coming up and talking to me. I don't want that public where suddenly everybody turns and looks at me. Have they given any suggestions to you or how would you otherwise seek to honor that while still letting them know that you recognize this, their work has not gone unnoticed and you do want to congratulate them or appreciate them or something along those lines? Is there an alternative route?
Yeah. I mean, I did have an example with somebody specifically on my team when I was giving them a lot of accolades for a project that they had ran and ran very well. And in that moment, I saw the look on his face. And then he basically said, I don't like any public recognition. So I learned from that moment on. So what I try to do with people that don't accept that or not comfortable with it is look for other ways to do it, either one-on-one, or if I am in a group setting and I do want to recognize them, I'll just include it as part of an overall, but not give an opening where they're in the spotlight and have to react or say something, or we're not clapping at them. I'll just kind of give it more openly about the great work the team's done and maybe a special call out to multiple people. I'll bundle it with multiple people, but I do give the one-on-one appreciation and recognition in instances like that.
Did you go back and forth with him a little bit? Like, okay, I appreciate that you don't want the public recognition. How can I? Or did he just accept the methods that you came up with after that?
I think he just accepted the methods because they were a little bit more low key and not put into the spotlight.
I think for people like you and me who are extroverts who, you know, feel like, okay, it's not a big deal. Thank you for the acknowledgement. I'm happy to acknowledge you. You know, it feels good to get credits. You know, you don't need ticker tape and be on Times Square billboards, but, you know, 2 seconds worth of the acknowledgement. Okay, no, I did a good job. Thank you. Moving on. But for those who that just makes them cringe, I think it's a great reminder to be mindful of that and perhaps even throw out for people out there to a general call to action for everybody on the team saying, by the way, if you're not somebody who's comfortable with this, please let me know how you would like to be acknowledged so that I can do it in a way that you appreciate and you know that I have not overlooked your contributions. You know, help me help you. I like to go back to that Jerry Maguire kind of connection there.
Yeah, fully agree.
All right. Well, Lisa, this has been a lot of fun, great content. I know people are going to be coming back to take some of the notes on a few of those pieces that we've outlined there, especially for interviews and things. How can people learn more about you and Cario Farm Therapeutics?
Yeah, you could go to our website, cariofarmtherapeutics.com. I'm also on LinkedIn. I'm happy to link in and connect with anyone. As you could hear probably from this, I love to connect with people. So please send me an invite.
Terrific. All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us and sharing your stories with us today.
Absolutely. This was fun. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
And to everybody else out there, thank you as always for tuning in. Be sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode. And don't forget to give us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your platform of choice so we can help even more people to increase their confidence, presence, and influence. And finally, of course, if you want to download my guide to free equipment recommendations for virtual influence, including my picks for microphones, lights, and more, go to speakingtoinfluence.com. speakingtoinfluence.com. I'm Dr. Laura Sokola, and you're listening to Speaking to Influence, Communication Secrets of the C-Suite.
Hi, everyone. This is Dr. Laura Sokola, and I want to sincerely thank you for listening to the Speaking to Influence podcast. If you love listening to these episodes as much as I love bringing them to you, be sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode. And please go to iTunes right now to rate and review our podcast in order to help us expand our reach so even more people can master the three C's: to command the room, connect with the audience, and close the deal.
Thanks for listening to Speaking to Influence, Communication Secrets of the C-Suite, the show for leaders who want to speak with impact. The hosts, producers, owners, and media distributors of the show make no guarantees that the strategies and information discussed will result in profit or other success and may result in losses. The opinions and statements of the hosts and guests do not necessarily reflect the opinions of the owners, staff, managers, broadcasters, or sponsors of the show. No medical or psychological therapy or personal or professional wellness or relationship advice is offered in the show. You are advised to seek counsel on matters related to your health, family, relationships, job, or other business and legal matters from licensed advisors in those areas prior to making any changes in business or lifestyle. No information provided may be suitable in your situation. As always, take responsibility for the decisions and actions you take, including the reactions they may make in your work, family, health, and life.